You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Thursday, June 30th, 2022. Limbo Rock. Supreme Court ruling introduces new regulatory uncertainty to the energy sector. Published by Rick Smeet. In its landmark West Virginia v. EPA decision, the Supreme Court on Thursday scaled back the powers of the Environmental Protection Agency, and, it would seem, other federal administrative agencies, to implement regulations that extend beyond what Congress specifically directed in its authorizing legislation, in this case the Clean Air Act. The ruling didn't go as far as throwing out the long-standing deference of courts to federal agencies' interpretations when it comes to acting under statutory law where there's any ambiguity, the so-called Chevron deference doctrine. But it does impose a threshold roadblock to the use of the doctrine, based on the major question doctrine. Yep, we have a duel of the doctrines here. The end result here is to hamstring the EPA and the Biden administration from reinstating emissions-limiting rules similar to the ones the Obama EPA put forth a few years ago in the Clean Power Plan, at least not without legislative approval. Most of the oil and gas industry and a lot of the power industry are likely to welcome the check on this particular regulatory authority, and certainly most of the oil and gas industry welcomes some restraint on the EPA in general. However, the broader implications of the ruling could make life more difficult in the near term for industries like oil and gas that rely on a stable, or at least semi-predictable, regulatory environment for making long-term plans. In today's RBN blog, we explain what was at stake in this case and what the decision could mean for the oil and gas industry. In a term stacked high with blockbuster decisions, it's tough to stand out, but when it comes to a thud factor, the West Virginia suit against the EPA was right up there. That's because it gets to the heart of the executive branch of the federal government's authority to shape regulatory policies. As noted, this was the clash of two doctrines, Chevron deference and major question. Are they? Chevron deference, established in 1984, pretty much says that if the law empowering an agency doesn't explicitly say not to do something to meet the goals of the statute, the agency can do it, as opposed to meaning deference to Chevron, much to Chevron's chagrin. The major question doctrine, established 10 years later in 1994, says that if the issue is a big deal with a lot of economic or social impact, the agency cannot do something that is explicitly authorized under the empowering. The way the Supreme Court sees it, the major question doctrine comes first, in essence. If something isn't seen as big a deal, then the Chevron doctrine takes over. The petitioners in the case, West Virginia and North Dakota, along with two coal companies, asked the court to decide whether a particular provision in the Clean Air Act, or CAA, Section 7411D, which addresses standards of performance for existing stationary sources of air pollution, constitutionally gives blanket authority to the EPA to issue major rules on what kind of generators can run, without any limits on what it can require. Simply put, the petitioners question the scope of the EPA's powers to force changes in generation mix in the name of greenhouse gas reduction. The question stemmed from a lower court decision handed down by the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, or D.C. Circuit. That case, American Lung Association v. EPA, challenged the Trump-era Affordable Clean Energy, or ACE, rule of 2019. ACE repealed and replaced the Obama-era Clean Power Plan, or CPP. Now here's where things can get a little confusing, keeping track of the EPAs. The Obama EPA wanted the CPP, the Trump EPA wanted to replace it with a much milder ACE, and the Biden EPA wants to go back to something like the Obama EPA's CPP. It's sort of like a game of hide the pea. The Trump EPA decision said that the text of the CAA is unambiguous in limiting the EPA's best system of emission reduction, or BSER, to improvements only at the physical site of an existing source, i.e., improvement of existing generators. Further, the provision did not allow the agency's powers to extend to forcing certain generators out of service or mandating which generators could be used. The Trump EPA argued that its interpretation was the only permissible one. The D.C. Circuit disagreed, deciding that the Trump EPA's interpretation was wrong, so the Trump EPA did not have a valid basis to reverse the Obama EPA rule. Be sure to keep your EPA straight. The court vacated ACE and remanded it back to the EPA. What EPA? It depends. That's not to say that it reinstated the CPP. In fact, the CPP was never in effect, given that it was stayed by the Supreme Court in 2016 and then repealed shortly after Trump took office. Ironically, the CPP's intended greenhouse gas reduction goal was reached anyway during the first year of the Trump administration, primarily because fuel economics drove the market to replace coal with gas. West Virginia and the other petitioners took issue with the D.C. Circuit ruling, asking the Supreme Court to clarify the limits of the EPA's powers in carrying out its mandates from Congress and apply the major question doctrine. So, in a narrow sense, the case was about whether the EPA can prescribe emission reduction measures that weren't expressly stated in the CAA and pitted the CPP against ACE. However, also at stake, and a major concern for both sides, was something much bigger: the limits of the Chevron deference doctrine and the degree to which it gives regulatory agencies some freedom in implementing the laws they're responsible for managing. Why does that matter? There are basically three premises that proponents of the Chevron deference doctrine commonly support. Number one, lasting and predictable regulatory rules are important even if they're sometimes problematic, since companies can usually plan and act according to any set of rules as long as they know what they are. Uncertainty and instability drive away investment. Number two, in establishing statutory law, Congress seems to do best when it does not try to address too many details, as facts and issues change over time. Congress historically has had a difficult time changing the statutory law to respond, whereas regulators given the responsibility of implementing a statute can respond much more quickly. Number three, the regulatory agencies will always have a lot more detailed subject matter expertise than congressional staff, as well as much more current, ongoing relationships with industry players and stakeholders. While the energy industry generally rebuffs regulatory pressures, regulatory stability is still important. And, when they're well-run, the federal agencies can provide the adaptation of legal standards to the real world to make things work. A good example of this is the restructuring of the natural gas industry to its present form in 1993, which was done by a regulatory agency instead of Congress, probably saving years and a ton of messy politics in the bargain. It should be noted that there is a distinction between an agency being able to stretch its authority versus an agency being able to stay flexible in responding to changing circumstances. There's always a concern that a regulatory agency with too little in the way of statutory limits on its authority could swing its policy too far one way or the other, based on the policies of the executive branch without congressional approval, threatening the separation of powers between the president and Congress. So it makes sense that there should be some balance struck between all of these factors, between agency flexibility and agency overstepping. How did the Chevron deference test fare in Thursday's decision? Well, the opinion doesn't toss it out entirely, but it doesn't leave it untouched either. Chief Justice Roberts, writing the majority 6-3 opinion, said, capping carbon dioxide emissions at a level that will force a nationwide transition away from the use of coal to generate electricity may be a sensible solution to the crisis of the day. But it is not plausible that Congress gave EPA the authority to adopt on its own such a regulatory scheme. A decision of such magnitude and consequence rests with Congress itself, or an agency acting pursuant to a clear delegation from that representative body. The ruling is clearly a setback for the Biden administration's plans to limit greenhouse gas emissions, but its implications could also extend well beyond environmental policy and signal that the court's conservative majority is skeptical of the power of administrative agencies to address major issues. Given that the major question doctrine has been around since 1994, with a decision on the Federal Communications Commission's, or FCC, authority over telecommunications, the limitation on the Chevron deference doctrine has been evolving for a while. So really, for as much as 28 years, more and more the rule has been that if a policy is going to have major economic impact, an agency can act if the law says yes, but it's not enough if the law just didn't say no. To what extent this will restrain agency discretion to use delegated authority going forward is unclear, in that it will depend on whether Congress is explicit in a delegation. If it is, it would give agencies a lot of flexibility. While some, including concurring Justice Neil Gorsuch, argue that Congress specifically cannot delegate authority on major questions just to pass the buck to the executive branch, this decision did not do that. Well, then, with some Easter eggs, a list of legal ironies embedded in the opinion. Number one, the Chevron deference doctrine was created to allow Justice Gorsuch's mom, Ann Gorsuch, the Reagan's EPA administrator, to loosen EPA rules, but now Justice Gorsuch is a major critic of the doctrine. Number two, the decision in the FCC case that created the major question doctrine cited a 1986 law review article by Justice Stephen Breyer, who dissented in yesterday's opinion on his way out to retirement. Number three, the major question doctrine, strongly favored by conservatives, would likely have also prevented efforts by the Trump administration to force a shift from gas to coal in the power sector. So, as dense, confusing, and full of irony as yesterday's decision is, it may not be the last word on regulations and regulatory power, depending on what Congress does, and regulatory agencies may tread more carefully in their assumed authorities until they do. Limbo Rock was written by Billy Strange and Cal Mann, under the pseudonym Jan Sheldon. The song was first recorded as an instrumental and released as a single by The Champs, Tequila, in 1961. The first vocal version of the song was recorded by Chubby Checker in 1962. Session guitarist Billy Strange won a $100 bet that he could write a better song in 5 minutes than what he and a friend were listening to on the radio. Strange won the bet, and the song was Limbo Rock. Chubby Checker's manager, Cal Mann, heard The Champs' version and asked Billy Strange if he could put some lyrics to it and have Checker record it. Strange agreed. Several months later, Strange thought that BMI had made a mistake when they sent him a check for $63,000. BMI told Strange it was indeed his money from The Champs and Chubby Checker's versions of his song. In the age of dance song records, and buoyed by his previous success with the genre, Checker released Limbo Rock as a single in October 1962. It went to number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart. Checker's appearance on The Ed Sullivan Show, where he demonstrated the dance while singing the song, helped to bolster its popularity. Limbo Rock appeared as the 7th song on Chubby Checker's 6th studio album, Limbo Party. Released in October 1962, the album went to number 11 on the Billboard Top 200 Albums chart. 2 singles were released from the LP. Chubby Checker, Ernest Evans, is an American rock and roll singer and dancer. He is known for recording and releasing songs that popularized dance styles in the early 60s such as The Twist, The Pony, and The Limbo. He has released 13 studio albums, 3 compilation albums, and 51 singles. He had a number 1 single on the Billboard Dance Music Singles chart in 2008 with Knock Down the Walls. At the age of 80, Checker still occasionally performs live.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.